This is Party on the Peninsulas, your weekly update on the people and policies leading Michigan, with Michigan Democratic Party Chair Lavora Barnes.
Welcome back to Party on the Peninsulas. I'm Lavora Barnes. The word this week, results. Government's supposed to work to improve our lives. We measure our public officials by results. Under Joe Biden, Gretchen Whitmer, and the Democrats in the legislature, we're getting results. 3 years ago, President Biden signed the American Rescue Plan into law. There's an excellent report on what that has brought to Michigan in the current edition of the online publication, The Gander. There's a link to that report on our website, partyonthepeninsulas.com. Among the highlights, 300,000 jobs added to Michigan's economy. The unemployment rate dropped from 6.5% in 2021 and has kept at 4% the last 14 months. A surge in new businesses. According to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce data, nearly 150,000 small business applications were filed in the state in 2023. Tax relief for families. In Michigan, families of nearly 1.9 million children benefited from tax relief in 2021, with more than 1.1 million families receiving $3,000 or $3,600 per child, depending on their age. The legislation also enabled Michigan families earning less than $125,000 to get back up to half of what they spent on childcare while working or studying, saving up to $8,000 for two children. An expansion to the federal earned income tax credit also benefited 600,000 workers in Michigan in 2021, providing up to $1,500 in tax relief to those without dependent children. The Whitmer administration added to that savings by repealing the Snyder administration cuts to the state's earned income tax credit. Michigan received more than $1.1 billion in federal funding to be used for rental and utility assistance. State officials said more than 250,000 applications were received, with more than 130,000 approved, an average of about $5,600 in aid for each household. Additional funding was designed to help low and middle income homeowners who fell behind on their bills. The American Rescue Plan Act also expanded health coverage through the Affordable Care Act, ensuring more middle income families in Michigan were eligible for low or no cost insurance, and providing key incentives for states to expand Medicaid. The law's subsidies, which were reauthorized as part of the Inflation Reduction Act in 2022, led to record-breaking signups for ACA plans this year. More than 418,000 Michiganders enrolled in plans for 2024. More than $15 billion in ARPA funds have been dedicated to public safety, with investments by over 1,000 state and local governments to avoid cuts to police budgets, hire more cops, upgrade equipment for first responders, and expand community violence intervention programs. Governor Whitmer campaigned on a promise to fix the damn roads, and she's keeping that promise with massive repairs underway or completed across Michigan. Legislators are working on expanding road repairs to local streets.
We'll be joined on the podcast by the chair of the State House Transportation Committee, Representative Ranjiv Puri.
But first, an update on some of the week's political and policy news from MDP's Dorian Tyus.
In the news this week, Michigan Supreme Court Justice David Viviano will not seek re-election this fall. Viviano, who is one of three Republican-nominated justices, announced his decision in a late Friday statement, calling his tenure on the state's highest court the honor of my lifetime. University of Michigan law professor Kimberly Thomas has already announced her candidacy for the Democratic nomination. At the U of M, she runs the Juvenile Justice Clinic, where she and law students represent people who cannot afford lawyers. She served on Governor Whitmer's bipartisan Michigan Task Force on Juvenile Justice Reform, which shared data-driven recommendations for improvement in the state's court system. There will be two Supreme Court seats on the ballot this fall. In addition to replacing Viviano, Justice Kira Harris-Bolden will also appear on the nonpartisan ballot. Justice Harris-Bolden was appointed to the court in 2023 by Governor Whitmer to succeed former Chief Justice Bridget Mary McCormick. Under Michigan's Constitution, Justice Harris Bolden must run in the fall to complete the final 4 years of McCormick's term. Former Vice President Mike Pence, who ran alongside Donald Trump in the 2016 and 2020 presidential elections, said Friday he could not endorse the former president's 2024 bid to return to the White House. In a Fox News appearance, Pence pointed to profound differences between him and Trump on multiple issues. Among those differences, Pence criticized Trump's recent opposition to the bill in Congress, attempting to force a sale of social media app TikTok. He also suggested Trump has walked away from efforts to lower the national debt. Legislation to expand Michigan's Freedom of Information Act to include both the governor's office and state legislature is advancing after members of the Senate Oversight Committee voted Wednesday to report bills to the full Senate floor for consideration. The measures would add both the legislature and the governor's office to Michigan's existing FOIA laws, which allow individuals to request records and other information from government organizations to gain a better understanding of how they're operating. Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson has unveiled the Michigan Transparency Network, the state's new online personal financial disclosure system that requires elected officials, candidates, and their spouses to publicly report details of their finances for the first time. In 2022, Michigan voters adopted Proposal 1, establishing personal financial disclosure requirements under the state constitution. Prior to the passage of Proposal 1, Michigan was one of only two states that did not require elected officials to disclose their finances to the public. Implementing legislation for Proposal 1 requires the Bureau of Elections to create and maintain an online system for these reports. Donald Trump's endorsement of former Congressman Mike Rogers for the Republican U.S. Senate nomination has drawn harsh criticism from other Senate candidates. Millionaire businessman Sandy Pentzler scrutinized what he termed unprincipled career politician Rogers' quote, selfish pattern of using political influence to personally profit from partnerships with the Chinese Communist government against the interests of our country, calling it wrong and disgusting. Former Congressman Justin Amash called Rogers a corrupt politician and establishment stooge. Amash went on to state that, quote, when voters get a hold of the Mike Rogers receipts, they're going to do everything they can to return him to Florida. Kentucky Senator Rand Paul ripped Trump for endorsing Rogers, saying, you have to ask yourself, who gives Trump this awful advice? Michigan Senate Democrats have passed legislation that would cap interest rates on payday loans. Far too often, these lenders target our state's most vulnerable communities, particularly in rural areas and communities of color. The legislation caps interest at 36% and requires that service fees be included in calculating the interest charge. The U.S. Department of Energy has announced a total of $80 million for two hydrogen projects in Michigan, reaffirming the state's leadership in clean energy and advanced manufacturing. Nel Hydrogen, which announced plans to construct an automated gigafactory in Plymouth Charter Township, will receive $50 million from the DOE to help develop the site's fully automated manufacturing process. The DOE is also awarding General Motors $30 million, allowing the company to expand domestic fuel cell manufacturing capacity while demonstrating improved fuel cell durability and performance for heavy-duty applications. Democrats from across Michigan will gather for the second annual MDP Rural Caucus Summit, April 11th through the 13th, at Shanty Creek Resort in Bel Air. Formed in 2017, the caucus seeks to support rural candidates with funds and information for greater success at the ballot box and better legislation in Lansing. National thought leaders and Michigan elected officials will discuss the issues and strategies needed to keep Michigan blue in 2024 and beyond. Among the speakers are keynote speakers Senator Debbie Stabenow, who chairs the Senate Agriculture Committee, and Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist, along with Democratic National Committee pollster Celinda Lake. Links to these and other stories are on our website, partyonthepeninsulas.com. From Michigan Democratic Party headquarters in Lansing, I'm Dorian Tyus.
Joining the podcast this week is the
chair of the State House Transportation Committee, Representative Ranjiv Puri.
He is also House Majority Whip, serving his second term in the Michigan House, representing Canton Township.
Before joining the legislature, Representative Puri worked
in financial consulting and then went on to work for President Barack Obama. After completing his MBA,
Representative Puri
began his work in Detroit's automotive industry, helping solve complex business problems and developing innovative solutions to help prepare Michigan for the economy of tomorrow. He believes in holistic solutions to the challenges facing the automotive industry, from cultivating the required talent by investing in our public education system, to fixing and modernizing our infrastructure and building a regional transit system to attract and retain the talent of tomorrow. Today, his committee is focusing on a tremendously difficult issue: how to respond to shrinking gas tax revenues so that we can do more to fix Michigan's pothole-plagued local roads. He discussed that challenge with our Walt Sword.
Representative Puri, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. A pleasure to welcome you today.
Well, thanks for having me again. I always love coming on.
As you work on transportation issues, it reminds me of the old saying, everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. And in the case of roads, everybody wants better roads, but nobody wants to pay for them. It's a real challenge for you now, especially as electric vehicles and hybrid vehicles are more and more dominating the sales. Our gasoline sales are going down. What are your options realistically? And if you were king, what would you do?
I think you're spot on. Unfortunately, no one enjoys the idea of having to pay for the roads or figure out a way to solve this issue. But there is a kind of a natural evolution that's happening, and it's hitting Michigan maybe a little bit harder than other states due to our propensity for the automotive industry here in Michigan. And so there is this transition happening to electric vehicles. I'm a big proponent of electric vehicles. I'm very excited for the benefits that they're going to offer to society. So we're going to have to change our formula about how we're funding our roads. Now, the reality is that the formula is not really working in the status quo right now. There's a tremendous deficit that currently exists from what's needed to maintain our roads, a multi-billion dollar shortfall of funding that currently exists. Now, with the proliferation of electric vehicles, as you mentioned, it's going to affect the way we collect our sales, our gas tax, because obviously electric vehicles won't be paying into that. And so the Band-Aid solution was to increase the registration fees for these electric vehicles, but that's just a very temporary solution. And so we are looking at what options are on the table. There's many other states are also dealing with this issue. Tolling is something that is starting to be looked at. There's also a concept called road use charge, or commonly also known as vehicles miles traveled, which is just an iteration of tolling. There's also a coalition of stakeholders, I think, in exploring the idea of possibly increasing the sales tax. There's other smaller measures like adding additional fees for delivery packages as they're dropped off to your home, and just other kind of ancillary ideas as well. But the reality is that estimates show we have a $3.9 billion shortfall in funding annually. And so that is what we are trying to figure out how to pay for, but also make the solution future-proof. So it doesn't really matter if driving an electric vehicle or combustion engine vehicle, that the formula is agnostic to that, but it is accomplishing our goal of closing that gap.
Tremendous progress has been made already in terms of state roads and the interstates because the funding mechanism was there. The governor ordered the Department of Transportation to bond for it. And as a result, our interstates especially have improved tremendously. But for local roads, they haven't been helped at all, especially in higher traveled urban areas, because the funding formula really favors rural areas so that larger cities especially really get hurt bad and can't even come close to keeping up. Are you looking at restructuring the funding formula so it's more attuned to the actual usage of roads rather than simply how long they are?
The formula is very complex. I think at times you often need a PhD to understand just how every dollar, where it ends up becoming allocated. I would hope that whatever solution we come up with in the future is just more equitable and making sure that we are obviously taking care of Michiganders all over the state, regardless if they live in urban, rural, or suburban areas, to making sure that they have adequate local infrastructure and to make sure that all roads in Michigan are funded.
Ohio and Indiana have the advantage of having a lot of vehicles just cross over their states going somewhere else. And as a result, their toll roads are very profitable for those transportation systems. Michigan's interstate system is more used by people that are staying in Michigan. So the burden would be heavier on Michiganders per capita, perhaps, than it is in Ohio and Indiana. Is toll roads, especially on 96, 94, 69, and 75, is that something that you see as a viable option, or is that more of a desperation move?
If I was to be candid with you, we are at a point of desperation. I guess it's all relative to how you look at it. These problems that we have right now and this discrepancy in funding that I'm talking about wasn't created overnight. This is something that has unfortunately built up over time, over years, over decades of just improper investment. Unfortunately, Michigan invests the lowest in per mile maintenance of roads than any of our peer states. You get what you pay for, and we have not put the funds in for a long period of time. And so now our roads are in deteriorating condition where they receive, if you look at kind of independent studies from engineers, from national interest groups, Michigan is unfortunately graded in kind of the C minus D range in terms of our infrastructure. Yeah, there is some nuance in Michigan in terms of if tolling was to be the solution, let's hypothetically say the dynamics of it would probably be different than how it works in Indiana and Ohio. But we are also a destination state. I think that there's probably more people that travel to Michigan in the summertime than versus Indiana and Ohio. And so I think there's a good amount of out-of-state revenue that could be captured. And then also when you look at 94, that is also actually a pass-through thoroughway, especially for commercial traffic, given, you know, our auto industry and the need to ship some of those parts into Canada, that happens on 94. And so there is some level of us having a pass-through thoroughways, nothing like the 80-90 corridor of Indiana and Ohio. But I think that tolling, again, if that was the option, could provide some benefit. It wouldn't be able to make up for the whole $3.9 billion gap that exists, but I think it could take a nice chunk out of that gap.
You've also got a political problem anytime you're talking about raising revenue, no matter how you do it. I remember back like 30 years ago when the John Engler administration was saying we need to raise the gas tax to keep our roads under repair. Back then, they were talking about phasing in over 3 years, a 9-cent increase in the gas tax. You look at that today and it's laughable. That wouldn't even begin to solve the problem. But that couldn't pass because of reluctance in the legislature. How strong is the sentiment amongst your colleagues to do something serious about our transportation funding?
Well, you're spot on. Again, as I've mentioned a couple times already today, this problem wasn't created overnight. And if we were having this conversation 15 years ago, the funding deficit that we would be trying to account for right now would be much, much lower. And if we don't do anything and we continue to bury our heads in the sands or kick the can down the road on this conversation, it's the number that's $3.9 billion right now will be much higher 10 years from now. And so I think it is prudent on all of us to do what is right and to have the tough conversation and figure out a path to get this done. I'm hoping that this is going to be a very thoughtful conversation that engages stakeholders from all political persuasions and different aspects of this conversation to come up with a way to accomplish our goals here that is politically viable. This is a conversation that I think can hopefully transcend some of the political and partisanship that exists right now, especially in our chamber. But if we can do this right, we can accomplish our goals of solving the funding crisis, of making sure that we're taking care of roads, whether they're urban, suburban, or rural, and hopefully getting a bipartisan plan passed out with 56 votes, again, if we can structure this the right way.
There's also the issue of equity, who pays? And that has got to be really tricky for you on an issue like transportation funding, where you've got rural areas where people might have to do a lot more driving, urban areas where they maybe have access to public transportation or can simply walk to work. How are you trying to balance all of that out?
Well, I am trying to have this conversation be more holistic than just the funding of transportation infrastructure. The reality is, as I've said, we need to come up with $3.9 billion annually to go into the infrastructure of our roads. But the transportation itself is evolving. We're seeing younger generations shy away from wanting to own or drive or operate a passenger vehicle. We're seeing younger generations become much more comfortable with walking places, biking, public transit is also growing, and the interest in public transit is also growing. We're also seeing a phenomenon where local municipalities are realizing that in order to attract younger residents, they need to re-envision the way that they're being designed. So we're seeing walkable corridors and things that just aren't so dependent on a passenger vehicle. And so one thing I'm layering into this conversation is as we look at funding mechanisms for our transportation infrastructure, we are making sure that we're being holistic and cognizant of the reality of the way that transportation might be in future generations might look very different than the way it is now. And so as we look at spending multi-billion dollars every year, let's do it in a way, and let's use this as a inception point of having a conversation that's more holistic and meeting the needs of making Michigan more desirable for younger populations, for retaining talent, for accomplishing those goals of having municipalities be able to design a more walkable footprint. And again, just accomplishing the needs, the transportation needs of our state, and spending our money in a way that's efficiently meeting those needs.
If you had the wisdom of Solomon, which you might, you probably still aren't going to solve this problem in the next 3 weeks. Realistically, how long do you think it's going to take to come up with a solution?
I don't know. I do want to urge everyone listening that none of this is imminent. I've had the fortune of doing a number of interviews on this topic, and I make it a point to make it very clear to everyone that this is going to be a very thorough conversation we're going to have, where we're going to engage stakeholders. And so nothing's going to happen tomorrow by any means. And so we don't need headlines that anything's going to be changing before our in-district working period come up here. But this is something that I think a priority conversation for much of our leadership. And we want to, again, just have a thoughtful conversation about finding a plan that's future-proof, as I call, that will account for the proliferation of electric vehicles that are happening, the changes that are happening to the formula in terms of how things are being funded, and making sure that we come up with a solution that will be able to last for future decades as we evolve the transportation needs of our state.
Representative Ranjiv Puri, thank you so much, first, for your willingness to take on such a difficult problem, and all the best of luck with you in trying to come up with some solutions that make sense both politically and holistically.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
This week's Trump outrage, his continuing attacks on Social Security and Medicare. In an interview with
CNBC, he made his plans for cuts very clear.
There is a lot you can do in terms of entitlements, in terms of cutting, and in terms of also the theft and the bad management of entitlements, tremendous bad management of entitlements.
It's a continuation of his first term. Trump recommended cuts in Social Security and Medicare in all four of his budget messages. His plan echoes the views of the Republicans running to be Michigan's new U.S. Senator. The Gander has reported that Mike Rogers, Peter Meyer, and Justin Amash all have extensive records that support slashing Social Security or Medicare benefit. Here is President Biden's promise from his State of the Union address.
Let's all agree once again to stand up for seniors. Many of my friends on the other side of the aisle want to put Social Security on the chopping block. If anyone here tries to cut Social Security, Medicare, or raise the retirement age, I will stop you.
One more Trump outrage: his efforts to stall the many criminal trials he's facing until after the election. Judges he appointed are doing his bidding by stalling on both of his federal trials, the Washington, D.C. trial into his leadership of the January 6th insurrection, and Florida trial about his theft and concealment of highly classified national security documents. His plan is obvious: stall until after the election, get elected president, and order the Justice Department to drop the cases. He is literally running for president to stay out of prison. That's this week's report from your Michigan Democratic Party. I'm Lavora Barnes. Thank you for listening.
Paid for by the Michigan Democratic Party, 606 Townsend, Lansing, Michigan, 48933.